Emma Kent.
And I'm Derek Russell, and this is The Memo,
a podcast of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and djournal.com.
Welcome into The Memo. It is not Monday, but I almost said it was Monday. It's actually Wednesday, November 1st. You ever feel like months should start the first day of the week sometimes?
Yes.
That was where I was going with that. It is confusing.
Isn't it?
It's Wednesday. It's the first of the month. Rabbit.
It is November.
It is November.
Wow.
My second favorite month.
What is your first?
October.
Oh, well, this is just great for you.
Yeah, it just rolls right into it. Yeah.
What about December?
Third.
It's a big time of year for you.
January 4th? Is it just kind of good?
January's 12th, actually. It gets weird.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what comes after December?
May.
Huh. Why?
I don't know.
You just like May.
Yeah.
Your birthday month?
It really doesn't have anything to do with it. I just like the short.
It's got me thinking now.
I don't have to abbreviate anything. It's just May. It's right there. What are your favorite months, Emma?
I think November is my favorite. Because it's fall and then you get to transition to the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Then October, probably.
I like Thanksgiving better than Christmas anyway.
It's tough. I like them both. I like them both a lot. It's hard to choose. I feel like you shouldn't have to choose. You can like them both.
You can you?
Uh-huh.
And I can't.
Okay. Well.
I turn my eyes up at Christmas.
For you. I'm
like, Christmas. Riding on the coattails of Thanksgiving. That didn't even get celebrated anymore. Halloween stuff comes out in August, and then before the Halloween stuff's even up. I had to go to Walmart yesterday in the electronics section, and no, was it yesterday or? No, it wasn't Halloween. That must have been Monday. And
before Halloween.
The day before Halloween. Uh-huh. And, you know, they have big Halloween sections at Walmart, obviously, and the candy, and then in the electronics section, they have DVDs and CDs of Halloween movies and everything, and they were already pulling them on the 30th and putting in Christmas.
Gotta get
like, ready. I walked by at one point, and they were taking out, like, all the Jason Friday the 13th movies, and I walked back, and it was like, Casper's Christmas, and...
At least it had Casper.
Yeah, it was
in
Casper.
There. I mean, it was, like, kind of like, a compromise.
I don't know why I went with Casper. I think Casper was in there, but it was, like, the Grinch that stole Christmas, and I was like, why are we... It's not... Halloween's not even
told. I went to Hobby Lobby this weekend.
I'm sorry.
It was a... I don't apologize.
Oh, okay.
I love going to Hobby Lobby.
Okay.
It's full of really interesting, cool things.
So how was Hobby Lobby? Were they decked out?
It was Winter Wonderland.
I'm sure it was.
It was quite overwhelming. I can't say that I hated it, but it was a little jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but hey, you know what? The day after Thanksgiving, I'm putting my tree up.
Years and years and years ago.
But not before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least
before,
like after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Black Friday is Christmas tree
Black
day.
Friday, you pack up the turkey stuff and the pilgrims and the little salt shakers that are shaped like
turkeys,
cornucopias, and all that good stuff. You know. And then you pull out the Christmas tree.
You get tired from all that tadurken, and then you put up the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
While
you eat a leftover turkey sandwich.
Yeah. Like 25 years ago downtown, where the farmhouse is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's far down as KOK, but we had a store in downtown Tupelo that was a Christmas store year-round.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It was very progressive, very ahead of its time.
Was it popular? Did people shop there?
I remember going in there a few times, but... Huh.
Was it is decorations? Ornaments, I guess?
Yeah.
Probably ornaments.
Yeah.
I've seen one of those somewhere on vacation. Like, I want to say it was like in maybe Estes Park, Colorado or something.
There was always like a train
going
in the window.
It was a very touristy place where I saw it.
I'm fascinated by like, there are like places that are, I've seen them on like the Travel Channel, you know, places that are called like North Pole.
Alaska,
it's like a city and the whole city is like Christmas themed all the time.
Dear God.
Their post office gets all the Santa letters and
That would be fun.
To visit.
I'm looking forward to when Santa comes to the Daily Journal.
Are you?
Yeah, I think it's fun. I dressed up as an elf years ago.
I didn't do it last year. I remember you doing it.
It's fun.
Once, yeah.
Yeah.
Will the elf Emma be?
Maybe.
Alpha?
No. Don't.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying.
We'll see. We'll see if I'm in the spirit.
Emma Kringle.
No, it's pretty close.
I'm just going to give up on that.
What are we going to talk about today, Gary?
Well, we probably won't, but our guests will talk about more, and we'll answer back to whatever they say.
And we'll just sit here and stare at them.
We'll be like, well, do you like Santa?
When do you put up your Christmas
tree?
Where
were you on the night of December 24th? I don't know what that has to do with anything. William Moore will be joining us, as well as Bobby Harrison from Jackson and Leslie Chris, who actually does head up our Christmas letters to Santa.
She division. Does. And so it's time to start sending those in.
It is time to start sending those in. We should talk to her about that as well.
Yeah, we'll have to ask her.
Column was about on...
get the details.
On Sunday.
I wonder what the best one she's ever gotten is, if she remembers.
We can ask her.
We will ask her.
We will ask
Stay
her.
Stay tuned, everyone.
Yes. Yes. Suspense.
Yeah. Stay All tuned right. to the end for more Santa talk.
Let's 2017. Get to it.
William Moore joining us now to discuss a shortage of firefighters in the area. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Where are we lacking the most?
The greatest need for firemen is in the volunteer fire departments.
That's always been a fascinating area to me, to just be a volunteer firefighter, not even a full-time one.
Well, unfortunately, for most volunteer firemen, it's almost a full-time job because, you get called out, at nights, weekends, all this other stuff. And, and a lot of folks try to have jobs that are amenable to letting them off. I mean, there's folks, fire calls come out during the day as well.
Yeah.
And some people have jobs that are such that, they can leave during the day and go respond on these calls. But other ones, other jobs aren't that way, that's one of the reasons why volunteer fire departments need folks. It's hard to get folks willing to, go out and respond to a fire, to a dangerous situation, it might be just a fire or a medical call, when they're not getting paid.
Right.
That's one of the things that more and more departments are finding out, The people that they would love to have as firemen are, younger adults. But those, are married, have job, have kids, and they have to make decisions. Do I sit there and sign up to go to fire training and respond to calls? Or do I want to spend time at home with my family and go to Little League games and soccer games?
And then actually, Tupelo Fire Department proper usually gets a higher number of applicants each year. They've said they've only gotten 28.
That's one of the things that was a surprise. Tupelo Fire Department is in a situation now where within the next 5 years, they could have over 20% of their department retire.
Wow.
So they're in a situation where they need to start building up numbers and at least getting names. I mean, traditionally, they have an open application series every year, and they usually have around 100 folks come out and pick up applications, and by the time they go through the process of coming in for the testing, the physical test, the interview, it starts weeding out. But they still normally end up with 20 to 25 names on a list, which when there is an opening come up, they'll call the first person on the list and say, hey, we have an opening. Would you like to come?
Yeah.
This year, when they held or announced the tryouts, they only had 40 people show up to pick up applications. And of those, only 28 went and took the written test and turned in all their information. So they're in the same situation that the volunteers are as well. They need folks as well.
So what are the requirements? What all do you have to do to be a volunteer firefighter?
To be a volunteer fire department, basically...
Have a truck.
No, not even have to have a truck.
Okay. Have a two-wheeler.
You have to have a driver's license, be 18, and a high school diploma.
But you have to take a test.
Basically, no. I mean, to be a volunteer fire department, you don't. I mean, that's part of the process.
The test consists of, do you want to be a volunteer firefighter,
yes or no?
Once you decide that you want to be one, then you would go in and they would sit there and there would be some testing process to figure out what your best role would be. Some folks, if you're a truck driver, they might want to get you to drive the truck. Somebody who drives a compact car and is scared of big vehicles, you don't let them drive the truck. There is a training process.
You're best taking phone calls.
That's what they'd be like, we're just going to leave you by the phone.
Why don't you hold the axe?
Well, there are people that they need volunteers for all aspects.
Right.
Some of it, it could... you know, some folks, you know, have to man the truck. I mean, there are people who have to man the truck.
Well, I think
you know, they stand out of the truck and operate the gauges and make sure that the truck is pumping, that there's still water flowing through.
That would be me. Just sit here and watch the truck. Just make sure nobody takes
I
it.
I think that's a myth involved with firefighters, too. It's just you're a firefighter, and there's different, just like policemen or anything else. There's different roles and different levels.
There are a lot of different roles and different. I mean, you know, some people prefer to go inside and fight fires, yeah. While other people would prefer to take more of the role on the outside. You know, man the truck, man the pumps. You know, go fetch stuff. You know, other equipment. You know, one thing. I mean, when you go to a fire, there's a lot of activity going on besides just pumping water on flames.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that, you know, that has to be done is, you know, replacing air tanks. I mean, you know, the folks have these breathing apparatus so they can have fresh air. And if you go to a fire, I mean, you'll hear the little bells start sounding off when they start running out of air, you know, and somebody has to help them
right.
Put a new air tank on there. I mean, because they can't do it by themselves while they're still wearing all the equipment. So, I mean, there's plenty of roles for someone, you know, if they want to help and volunteer. You know, and, you know, that's one of the things, you know, if, you know, at a volunteer department, you know, you're required to go to like 75% of the training session, meetings and training sessions. They usually meet twice a month. You know, it's where folks practice what they do.
Right.
You know, and then they hope to have folks respond to at least 25% of the calls. And I know when I talk to the folks at South Tula, they have around 400 calls a year. You know, not all of those are fires. So they also respond to medical calls, too. You know, it might be a wreck. It might be somebody just having trouble breathing.
Yeah.
So volunteers can respond to medical calls.
Well, see, actually, the Tupelo City Fire Department, they respond to medical calls as well. I mean, they're right. That first line. You know, they're usually the first ones there, right. And in emergency situations. So I mean, you know, if somebody's in a fire, they need medical attention too, just because of the smoke inhalation.
Seven departments spread out across town there.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier
to get places. Sometimes.
They can usually get there quicker than the ambulances can, which are, you know, in one central location.
One location, exactly.
You know, it's the same way volunteer fire departments. You know, they can usually get there quicker than an ambulance can.
How is response time for volunteers? Because, I mean, obviously, I'm just thinking if they're at work, by the time you get the call and can get out the door and...
Because of that situation, there is a lag time because, you know, the call has to go in to 911. They have to figure out where the call is. Then they have to page out that department. You know, and like you say, you know, during the day, a lot of folks are at work. And you have to figure out, all right, well... who can respond, and then normally those folks responding will have to communicate with each other to see, all right, well, who's closest to the fire department? Who can actually go pick up the truck and drive the truck there while other folks will just drive straight to the fire?
Yeah.
You know, one of the other roles, especially with volunteer fire departments, but you have somebody that has to handle traffic because you have a bunch of volunteers showing up all in their personal vehicles. They have to make sure that they can find a place to park that won't interfere with emergency vehicles.
Right. So moral of the story is we need more firefighters.
They need more volunteer fire departments. And that, you know, one of the things, you know, that the Tupelo fire chief said, you know, not everybody is cut out to be a fireman.
No.
You know, and before somebody, you know, takes that step, you know, wanting to go out and, you know, try to sign on with the Tupelo fire department, where there's a full-time job where, you know, where you have to go and respond to fire. I mean, he suggests people, all right, well, if you think that you might want to become a fireman, join a volunteer fire agency.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way that you can, you know, dip your foot in the pool, see if that's something you like. You know, there's definitely a need there.
I mean, when I was a kid, the first person, when you got asked what you want to be when you grow up, that's what everybody's answer. The fireman. Yeah.
Still.
And I don't know. Maybe not anymore.
Or at least for kids, maybe not as they get older. I mean, Daniel and Joseph both talk about being firefighters.
I want to work at Facebook, you know, something like that. I don't know. But it's sad.
I want to have a startup.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Venture capitalist. Something worse. But,
but with the fireman, you get to wear the cool hat.
Yeah.
Get to ride the big red truck.
Yeah.
Get to, you know, blow the horn, run the siren.
Have a Dalmatian.
Unfortunately, none of them around here have Dalmatians.
Yeah.
We should. That should change.
Donate a Dalmatian Day.
There we go. Maybe we could find a veterinary that's knows somebody that has Dalmatians.
We don't see a lot of Dalmatians around here. I think there's some, but
Dalmatians aren't very.
One of the stations used to have one.
Yeah, I thought.
It's been a while, but I can remember them coming around at the schools when I was a kid with one. I don't remember which station it was, but one of them.
But
did.
When you were a kid, that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Well, thank you, William. We appreciate you coming on today.
Glad to be here.
Be sure to listen to the Daily Journal's newest podcast, Open the Case of Leochi. Reporter Emma Kent, that's me, takes a fresh look at the unsolved disappearance of a 13-year-old Tupelo girl from 25 years ago. It includes a potentially overlooked witness and a person of interest in the case that police have never spoken about publicly. The 6-episode investigative serial podcast is now available in iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and a variety of other podcast apps, or you can stream it from our website, djournal.com/openpodcast.
You can also look for the 2 sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with Brad Locke and Dalton Middleton that you can listen to in iTunes podcast apps or at preprally.djournal.com. And Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans can check out Double Coverage with Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry with a new episode each Thursday afternoon where they provide game previews, insight, and commentary and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. You can also listen for that free in iTunes podcast apps or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
Got Bobby Harrison here now to talk about a story he wrote last week. Phil Bryant, Mississippi governor, voiced support for bringing a pair of issues before statewide voters. Vote to maybe raise the state's gasoline tax to pay for needed repairs to roads and bridges, and then another on whether or not to change the Mississippi flag. So, Bobby, those are 2 issues that I feel like have been hot topics lately. Tell us a little more about what the governor said and his support for bringing these 2 issues to a vote.
Well, hey, Emma, how you doing?
How are you, Bobby?
Good. He spoke about those after his speech last week to the Mississippi Economic Council, their annual hobnob event, when he was talking to reporters. I guess he was asked about the gasoline tax, and Senator Dean Turk Kirby, a Republican from Pearl, down in Rankin County, has proposed not only a gasoline tax, but other fees to help raise money for what most everybody agrees is a deteriorating state transportation system, and they, you know, the legislature having a hard time coming up with additional money to deal with transportation issues. And Kirby is going to propose some taxes and fees, including the gasoline tax increase. And he wants to put it to the voters to let them decide. And Bryant came out in favor of that proposal last week, and then at the same time, he also reiterated his support for putting the flag on the ballot to let the voters decide on that issue again. He is adamantly opposed to the legislature changing the flag without having a statewide referendum. Of course, the flag is a big issue because it contains the controversial Confederate battle emblem, battle cross, as part of its design, and we're the only flag left in the nation that does that. And so there's a lot of people feel that it's a symbol of hatred and racism. Of course, other people say it's a symbol of our state's heritage. So, you know, that battle's going to go on, and Brown wants people to vote on it.
Yeah, and in your story, you said that a recent poll showed that a statewide vote to change the flag would likely fail. And, of course, there was one that failed in 2001. So, you know, I guess it seems like there's a lot of movement to change the flag, but then these polls show that it wouldn't work. What's kind of what do you think the likelihood of us having that vote and then for it to pass or fail? What do you think about sort of the odds there?
Yeah. Emma, I'm old enough to, I covered the 2001 vote, and I was probably, I guess I've never been as more wrong about something than I was about that vote. I thought in 2001, I actually thought the new flag was going to be adopted by voters, but it failed spectacularly. I think more than 65% of the people voted to keep the old flag. And while it might be closer now, that poll and just kind of anecdotal evidence indicates that there's still more support to keep far more support to keep the old flag than there is to adopt a new flag. And, Bryant wants a vote on the issue. Other people, there's a lot of people think that, if Mississippi voted on it, it would put us in the spotlight and not in a good way if the old flag was voted back in. So there's a lot of people who want to change the flag but fear a statewide vote for that reason, that it would it would just, you know, put the state in a bad light if it was defeated again. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of support by the legislative leadership to put the issue on the ballot to be voted on. So it would take their support to actually get on the ballot. So while Bright talks about it, I mean, I'd be surprised at this point if it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just kind of thinking out loud, Emma, you know, Roger Wicker, U.S. Senator, is up for re-election in 2018. And he is one of the few Republican politicians in the state who has come out for changing the flag. And it would be interesting. It was on the ballot in 2018 at a time when he could be facing Chris McDaniel, you know, a Tea Party favorite state senator from Aliceville, who is kind of making the flag the fact that Senator Wicker has proposed changing it. State Senator McDaniel is kind of making that an issue at the same time talking about running against Wicker. So, you know, that's really create an interesting dynamic if the flag was on the ballot at the same time that McDaniel and Wicker were running against each other.
Yeah, that could make for an interesting election issue there. Okay, and then kind of switching gears, let's talk about the gas tax a little bit, a gas tax increase. So State Senator Dean Kirby has said he will file legislation calling for the vote on the gas tax increase. Does this mean, is that a good indicator that we're going to see a vote on that, or is it still sort of up in the air? What's kind of your take on that?
Yeah, I think it's up in the air. I mean, I really do. You know, there's one string of thought that if there's a gas tax on the ballot and it fails, you know, there would never be a legislation passed to provide more money for roads and bridges. So it'd kind of be, you know, a vote on the issue kind of be an all or nothing type proposition. But then at the same time, you know, it doesn't seem the legislature is willing to bite the bullet, if you will, and come up with additional revenue. So, you know, so the supporters of the spending more money on roads and bridges might feel that that's their only option to try a statewide referendum. So, in other words, I don't know if it's going to make the ballot or not.
Yeah, but, no,
I
mean, that's...
I think it'll be an interesting issue in the 2018 session. And as I said, just about all the legislative leadership and all the legislators want to spend more money on roads and bridges, but they just can't find out where to find that money.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah. And excuse me if this is a dumb question, but to increase the gas tax, does it have to be done through a vote, or is that something that they could just do during the legislative session?
Oh, well, you know, absolutely, they could do it. The legislature could do it. And some people would argue that's their job, is to make those tough decisions and not to put it off on the electric and just kind of pass the buck, if you will. But yeah, of course, they could raise the gasoline tax. You know, our gasoline tax is 18.4 cents per gallon, which is one of the lowest in the nation. You know, hadn't been raised since 87. And it brings in, you know, it brings in roughly the same amount of money it did in 87, because it's not a sales tax, it's a use tax. So you know, so it stays 18.4 cents a gallon on a gallon of gas, no matter whether that gallon of gas costs $1 per gallon or $3 per gallon. And while the revenue is static, the cost of working on roads and bridges has increased, like, you know, 400% by some accounts during that same time period. So it put the Department of Transportation in a tough position to try to keep the maintenance up on the state's highways and bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And then local governments are facing the same issue. They're having you hear stories about county bridges being closed throughout the state and school buses and whatnot having to drive 20, 30 miles out of the way to avoid the dilapidated bridge. So, you know, it's a real issue in many areas of the state that is causing problems for convenience sake, and also causing problems for commerce. And, you know, and it's also a safety issue.
Right. Alrighty, Bobby. Well, thanks for talking with us today. I guess we'll wait and see what happens with these two issues.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Thanks, Emma.
Thanks. If you want to hear more about the issues being debated in Jackson, be sure to check out the Daily Journal's Capital View webcast every Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capital Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison, who you just heard, provides commentary and analysis on those issues being debated in Jackson. Watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day.
You can also wake up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's news break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video. Shows are posted each weekday at 7 a.m. at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, and the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. Leslie Chris joining us now. How are you, ma'am?
I'm fine. I'm chilly.
Always a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
You wrote a story.
I did write a story. I've written several recently.
You have written several recently. Mm-hmm. We always love to read your writing in the pages of the Daily Journal.
You're very kind.
Well, very honest, too.
Thank you.
Not to a fault, I guess, but, you know. Your story we're talking about today was about a fox, though. A sly fox.
A very intelligent fox.
A red fox, though it's not red.
A red fox that is not red. It's kind of a gray color, but her color is actually called pearl.
Pearl?
Pearl.
If I still had hair and it was going gray, I'd call it pearl, too.
Yeah. I learned that just because a red fox is a red fox does not mean it's red in color, that red foxes and gray foxes are types of foxes, mm-hmm. though a gray fox could have gray hair and a red fox could have red hair.
Sounds like a Dr. Seuss book all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Where did you find said fox?
I found said fox in Tupelo. Actually, Lauren Wood, our photographer, came up to me about a month ago and said, there's a story here that I'm going to give you, but only you can do it. And I appreciated that because she likes to give me animal stories. So I reached out to Lake and Warren, the owner of Tinsel the Fox, and asked her if she would let us visit and do a story. And she said, absolutely.
Well, excellent. So why does she have a fox?
She has a fox because she loves animals, and she actually has always loved foxes, and she met on social media a woman named Michaela Rains, who has a website called Save a Fox, and she has made it her life's work, though she is a very young woman, to save foxes from fur farms, which are deplorable things, though they are legal. In certain states, like Minnesota, where Lake and found Tinsel. But the foxes in a fur farm are bred and born into captivity. The first food they get comes from a human hand, and so once they are rescued, if they're lucky enough to be rescued and not just killed for their pelt, they are not able to be sent back into the wild because they weren't born free, and so they're not able to take care of themselves. So this girl, thanks to social media, actually reached out to Lake and asked her if she would be willing to fill out an application and adopt a fox. And she did, and one of the main things she had to be able to put on that application was that there was a veterinarian in the area that would agree to take care of the fox. And if she had not found one, she would not have been able to adopt Tinsel. But Dr. John Morris out at Saltillo Small Animal agreed, and Tinsel is his first domesticated fox patient.
I got a lot in my yard. That I see almost
I've
nightly.
Actually seen some in my neighborhood, too. They're beautiful animals.
They are. They run fast.
They do.
Away from me.
They do run fast.
They're quick, and they jump over the lazy dog.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry. As an English teacher, you surely appreciated
I did appreciate it. I did.
Did you pet the fox?
You know, I did not pet the fox. She kind of, Lakin said, I wish that you could pet her, and I'm sure that if I hung out a long time and she got used to me, not Lakin, but the fox, then it would have probably eventually been all right. But she was very fearful and skittish when I got there because Lakin had just gotten her out of her outside enclosure and brought her in the house. She spends a lot of time in the house running around with the cats and the people in the house, but somebody new came in. I came in, and I noticed that Lakin's mother was going around as soon as I walked in spraying some air freshener. And apparently foxes, though they're canines, they have an endocrine system that is similar to skunks. And when they are fearful, they emit a musky odor. Now, I never smelled anything that was horrible. I never smelled a skunk smell, but anyway, the mother did, and she was all up in our faces,
getting
spraying, until her daughter told her to please stop. But anyway, the fox was a little skittish, and then when Adam came and was click, click, clicking his camera, she was really... Didn't care for that. And I noticed that even Lakin had on some big leather gloves, and I asked about that. And even though she is able to love on the fox, and the fox will cuddle up in the bed with her when she's in her room, she said that it is in the nature of foxes, they are biters, and that they bite when they are afraid, and they bite when they're playing. And it's not like a little nip like our dogs do when they're playing. It's a pretty...
Yeah.
It can hurt, so... Yeah,
they have teeth.
Yeah, and she's asked, is there any way that she will grow out of that? And she's been told, no, that's just the nature of a fox, just to make sure you have a... When you're playing with her, to make sure you have a toy or something you can substitute close to her mouth instead of your hand, so...
I'll be honest, I'd be a little bit more fearful looking at, through these pictures of seeing tinsel in my driveway than I would the more orange ones I see.
Yeah, but if you see her up close, she's really a beautiful fox. And she's got
she's pretty.
It's just fox tail that's got that
white
characteristic
puff
white puff
at the end.
And she also says when she's happy and playful that she will curl her tail up like a husky. Yeah. So she did not do that while we were there. But we did. Once she got put back in her enclosure, Lakin gave Adam and me both a piece of kibble to give her, and... We approached her, and she took it right out of our fingers, and she took it more gently than my dogs ever have.
Wow.
So she is not a pet. That's she and Dr. Morris stressed that, you know, they don't want people to read the story and run out and say, hey, let's go get a fox, because they're not really pets. And though they are sort of domesticated because of... you know, their situation, they're just not pets. They're wild animals, and they always will be. They're just wild animals that have to be kept by humans to be safe.
Very cool story, Leslie. Emma has some questions she'd like to ask you now.
Oh yeah, I do. That was just such a strange transition.
I'm sorry. I was just
trying
to be
helpful.
To
talk about Santa letters.
Oh, okay.
So in your column this week, you said, now's the time. We got to start getting those in, and people can send those in until December 6th. Was that right?
I think so.
And then they'll run December 18th?
Yes.
Okay. So I wanted to know what the best letter to Santa you've ever gotten was, or if you remember like a really good one.
I do, because I actually wrote a column about it.
Okay.
It was not just a letter. It was a package. And if it was a package with a letter in it, and it was filled with used pacifiers, a woman here in town had, they had told their child that Santa, if the child, I think it was a little boy, wanted Santa Claus to come see him, it was time for him to give up his pacifier.
That's smart.
And so they said, let's mail them to Santa Claus, and they did. And I wrote a column about it and talked to her. I found her, and anyway, awesome. It worked.
How old was the kid?
Roughly? Oh, gosh. You're a father. How old are kids when you take them, when they should give up their pacifier?
We stayed away from pacifiers, so I wouldn't have to go through that.
They're not
so
good for your teeth anyway.
I just never started with them. I'd say probably 2-ish.
Yeah, so.
I think we were done under a year.
Yeah. So whatever. I mean, he was a small thing, and... But I guess that wasn't really a letter to Santa. It was a package to Santa, but it worked. But, you know, there's some sad letters to Santa. I mean, we've gotten them from adults before. We don't usually run them, but there's some really sad ones about people who don't have anything, or who are in jail and who are in just really bad situations. And so we have wept over some of those in the years since we've been doing this. And, a lot of kids don't have much creativity. They just make a list. And I think I did that. I think I did that maybe 1 year, and then my mother said, you need to be more creative with your letters. But it's just like, Dear Santa, and it's 1 through 52, and it's what they want, and it's a lot of stuff. But some kids are really creative. And, you know, last year we didn't get many.
Huh.
That's not true. 2 years ago, we didn't get many. And then the advertising department started doing the having Santa here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we're doing that again. I haven't heard.
I hope so. I was talking about that too. Earlier.
Because that way they, you know, encourage them to write their letters or bring their letters. And we've been getting them. But 1 year, I was afraid because we just, they weren't coming in. And I thought, people don't believe anymore. But usually I start getting letters to Santa around July. Somebody has given some early thought to what they want, and they send a letter. But anyway, I hope kids will send them in and be creative and not just list your wishes.
Yeah. All right. Well, you heard them, guys.
I mean, yeah, just get them to send it to me.
Okay.
To Santa in care of.
To Santa.
In care of Leslie. At the Journal.
At the Journal.
And my email address is Leslie, all lowercase, LESLIE.CRISS@Journal Inc. And that's Inc. with a C, not with a K, .com.
Right.
Or you can mail them the old-fashioned way. If they don't come in ahead of time or if they don't meet the deadline, they will still be forwarded on to the North Pole. So Santa will get letters. And please, if you're a teacher, do not send big old packages of letters that are all forms. And every child in the class has written the same thing. Encourage your students to be creative.
So we're going to run these on, when will we run these?
18th, I believe.
December 18th.
We used to run them on Christmas Eve, but they changed that. So it'll be a whole section of Santa letters.
All righty. Thanks, Leslie.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Do you feel better now that you've played that?
I just had to. It was great.
All right. Well, thanks.
I've been thinking about it this whole time.
Thanks for joining this show today. I hope you all have that in your heads for the rest of the day.
Remember,
all the stories discussed today can be found in your daily journal or online at djournal.com, where you can find new episodes of The Memo at memo.djournal.com or follow us on Twitter at djournalmemo.
Well, Derek.
Well, Emma.
I'm going to go home and put up my Christmas tree now.
I think you have a few hours left to work, dude.
And skip Thanksgiving altogether.
No, don't do that.
Just to spite you.
The day after Halloween.
Can we bring Thanksgiving back? can we have a charge to not forget Thanksgiving?
Needs a Charlie Brown.
Hashtag
Thanksgiving
save
special.
Thanksgiving. Remember Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Start a campaign.
Thankful Thanksgiving. Thankful for Thanksgiving. That's like important. A 4.
That's really long.
Thanks for THX for Thanksgiving.
You could do THX for THX giving.
You know what? I'm over it. Let's just put up our Christmas tree. We'll see you guys on Friday.